Welcome to I'm Not Joking, the podcast where a behavioral scientist examines what it's like to live a humorous life. Glimpse into the lives of the funniest people in entertainment, business, and science as your host, Dr. Peter McGraw, explores their habits, motivations, and secrets to success. Get ready to fire up your brain and your funny bone. Now, here's your host.
Welcome to the final episode of I'm Not Joking, the podcast that looks at the lives of funny people. I'm Peter McGraw, and today's return guest is J.D. Lopez. For over six, but less than 10 years, J.D. has been writing and performing comedy. An early adopter of podcasting, he launched Left Hand, Right Brain in July 2014, where he has unique conversations exploring creativity with iconic personalities. In 2019, J.D. founded Colorado's premier podcast network, Left Hand, Right Brain Productions, which has produced podcasts such as Let's Get Drunk and Talk About Your Wedding and Los Chupacabros. No, tell me how it is.
Los Chupacabros.
Los Chupacabros, which translates roughly into the Sucky Boys.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of that as when I was naming it. I just thought it was funny.
And most importantly, JD was my first guest on I'm Not Joking. Welcome back, JD.
Thank you for having me.
So you were really quite kind in helping me get started as a podcaster. I don't know how much you remember how helpful you were.
Oh, I remember it well. Lots of emails at work, had a job I wasn't happy with, so I was happy to be doing something else.
Yes, you helped me in terms of figuring out gear, and you gave me a lot of advice about production and about interviewing and so on. And so we actually had an inaugural, the beginning, the initial episode was the two of us talking about. And so I thought, I'm winding this down. I actually haven't had a guest on I'm Not Joking in several months now. And in many ways, I think like the podcast served its purpose. You know, things don't, as I like to say, TV goes on too long. You know, we don't need seven seasons of the average television show. Like, let's wrap it up after one or two or three seasons. So I'm wrapping this up. I'm putting a bow on this. I believe in closing chapters and opening new ones. And I just thought it'd be fun to get together with you, see how you're doing, and kind of reflect back on the podcast. And as a result, I've asked you to listen to all 100 episodes in preparation of this.
Oh, I thought you said pick three.
So we're going to talk. I actually did ask JD to come prepared with three of his favorite episodes. So as a recap, I don't know how much my average, first of all, I don't even know if I have an average listener, to be honest.
Oh, you didn't keep track of your Libsyn, or I don't know where you hosted, but I like going to Libsyn and seeing where they're downloading all that jazz.
I don't do too much of that stuff. I do know my download numbers, and they've always been modest. I've never promoted the podcast. You sort of expect them to be modest. And also, as you know, there are just a ton of comedy podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so but for some reason in the last month, there's been like a huge number of downloads, like 40,000 downloads in one month.
Oh, wow.
And I have zero idea why it happened. So if someone can email me and tell me why this has happened, I don't know if maybe it got picked up in an algorithm, you know, on Spotify or Pandora or something like that. But suddenly, I just had a ton of downloads that just came out of nowhere. So that's nice. I mean, I'm glad, you know, you put it out there. It's out there forever. And so, right. So it's quite good.
Yeah.
If you may recall, you know, my goal of this podcast was sort of twofold. One was I wanted to develop a new skill, and that is as an interviewer, you know, rather than the guest, the person on the other side of the mic. And then the other one is to seed my then secret project, which then became my new book, Stick to Business, and to look for stories, anecdotes, lessons, and so on that I would have otherwise not known about. And so what I thought we would do is kind of talk a little bit about I don't know. I think for both of us, what are the challenges and what are the benefits of doing a podcast, or in your case, doing more than one podcast and producing podcasts? And I talk a little bit about Shtick to Business. We talk about kind of a little walk down memory lane about highlighting some of the episodes that are good. So if someone's listening now, they might say, oh, I that'd be worth to go back and look at that.
Right.
Let's talk first about you and your experience. So you've been now podcasting for 6 years. You were, I think 2014 was still early to podcasting.
Well, I mean, not if you're in the podcast game. I mean, Ricky Gervais was doing in 2007, I think, was like one of the first things, you know, Kevin Smith, Adam Carolla. I mean, mm-hmm. the godfathers of, you know, podcasting. I thought it was late to get in the game. You know, I thought when I started, I was like, oh, everyone's got a podcast already. But now it's boomed, you know. And, you know, you wonder if that's going to burst at any point, you know. But who knows?
But you just move on to something else. You know what I mean? True. I think that's the natural evolution of product adoption. You know, something else will come along, or it'll pivot and change.
Yeah. And that's something you talk about in Shtick to Business, is taking a bigger stage, you know? And I always thought that podcasting was that for me. Well, might have been that for me with, you know, I was having some difficulties. If anyone who goes back and listens to that first episode, I was having some difficulties with my own comedy journey, you know, feeling a little frustrated with stage stuff. And I thought podcasting was going to be that bigger stage, you know, because I have way more room to discuss serious, to ebb and flow in between. It's not just joke, 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 joke. You have to, meanwhile, the term mow down the audience with jokes, it was thrown around a lot when I started comedy. So,
yeah, I had Chuck Roy on the podcast. He's mm-hmm. a Denver-based comic and quite an interesting fellow. And he talked about, I don't know, one of his buddies has this saying about boom, shake the room. And, you know, when you kind of get, you got a laugh and then you get another laugh and you get another laugh and they just start to, and the next thing you know, the entire room is just fully immersed in that experience. But be able to do that, you've got to be, you hit a home run, you hit a home run, you hit a home run. And that requires a level of audience sort of attention and participation that clubs can have. But podcasts don't require that, which I think is pretty neat. You know, yeah. You can be driving, you can be walking, you can be ironing, you can be doing other things, and you don't have to be completely tuned in, and you can still get value from the conversation that's there. Yeah, you strike me as kind of, this is really an element that you are quite comfortable in. You know,
Yeah, I've been talking in a microphone like this for a long time now, so. Yeah. And I do enjoy it because I know, I think I trust it more like a good improviser is like, you know, you trust your partner, you know, ebb and flow, you give energy, you get energy. Mm-hmm. And I think I trust it to like, we'll find something, you know, and we can always just cut out, you know, if a conversation doesn't go anywhere, we can cut out any long pauses. You know, that's exactly what I think I enjoy about producing stuff is I control that.
Yeah.
You know, I can cut out any long pauses if I sound, you know, not the most eloquent trying to read something off a monitor or something like that. Boom, get rid of it, do it again. You know, I do enjoy that element of control that you don't have on stage with, you know, doing live stand-up some of the time.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, not to pull the back the curtain too much, although I might call this episode curtain call.
I do like that.
Is there are what we are doing right now will sound better for the people who are listening. That is that a good editing is both stylistic and structural. So cutting out some of the ums and ahs and you knows and rights and awkward pauses and stumbling of words. And then some of it is, let's trim that branch. You know, there was something that went off and it just didn't quite work and you pull it off. My podcast, so I have actually moved on to another podcast. I don't know if you know this, but I have this podcast called Solo, The Single Person's Guide to a Remarkable Life.
I've been listening to that. And I have some questions.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm happy to talk about it. And I'm happy to cross promote it on my own podcast.
Sure, we could do that towards the end, I guess. You know.
But I'm not joking, has always been very, very lightly edited. I had always wanted it to be kind of very conversational. It didn't have to be super, super tight. And we'll get to why in a moment. I feel much more pressure with Solo to make it sound good. To be a little, have it a little cleaner and a little more tightly edited, although it still is very conversational. So I want to talk to you a little bit about your evolution. Oh, one last thing. It is hard to know where podcasting is going to go. I've seen a tiny glimpse, and it looks like this. You have an idea for a TV show, right? And so normally what happens if you have an idea for a TV show is you create a pitch deck, you find a way to get into a room or on a Zoom call with some executives. Probably you have to attach some talent to it. It helps if you have an agent and so on. There's a lot of gatekeepers in the world of TV. In the same way that there used to be a lot of gatekeepers in the world of publishing. So if you wanted to write a book, you needed a lit agent, you needed to write a proposal, you needed to get it in front of editors, you need to get an advance and so on. Well, now you can just produce your own book. You know, you can do it. You can actually do it as like a one-man band, one-woman band, so to speak. Or you can even outsource some of the stuff. Now there are companies that will help you produce your book, even develop the idea, edit it, and so on. But one of the cool things about podcasting is it really can be a minimum viable product. So when I first started this podcast, I just had a little tiny microphone that I would put on my iPhone and a stand. It was a $35 startup cost to this. And under good sort of sound quality in a good room, it was passable kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, now I've got mics and I've got headphones and I've got all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But now you can put out a podcast, and if it catches on, that is a proof of concept, for example, for a television show, perhaps.
Yeah.
And now suddenly people are just like, you know, someone's like, I have 400,000 listeners, you know, and people say, well, we know that the world cares about that. The marketplace has spoken. And so obviously podcasting can be really, really quite expensive, or you can kind of bootstrap it, do it yourself, you know, and so on. But it's an easy way, and I think a rather fun way if you're a talker like the two of us, to try something out.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about your evolution as now moving from just being a host to also having a podcast network, and what's been happening. Where have your pain points been? What have you been bad at and got good at? What's going on?
I was thinking, well, with the Let's Get Drunk and Talk About Your Wedding podcast, mm-hmm. Which is my wife and our friend Jen.
By the way, when I read that as Let's Get Drunk, and then I thought you had a second podcast called Talk About Your Wedding.
Oh, okay.
It is Let's Get Drunk and Talk About Your Wedding.
Yeah, I didn't notice that it was there was a pause there. I thought you just thought Let's Get Drunk was a point you wanted to, you know, emphasize.
No, I misread.
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, it's a whole thing. The sticking point with that is everyone thinks, oh, let's get drunk and talk about this thing. I know these other comics that had a podcast that was all about getting wasted. I mean, they didn't last, I think, maybe 30 episodes. I mean, and they had to, the hosts were wrecked at the end. You know, they're like, we got to take a break. We got to, you know, going hard every week. I mean, if you're doing a podcast and getting ridiculously drunk every week, it's so hard.
Yes.
And not that my wife and our co-host Jen is going that hard every week, but dealing with, you know, drunk, it's slightly tipsy hosts all the time is a little, and when you're not, you know, as a producer, it can be a little grinding every now and then.
Yeah. So you overpromise a little. So it's let's get drunk and talk about your wedding, but it really should be let's have a drink and talk about your wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
Indeed. Okay, so tell me, you know, because I was leaning on you 2 years ago to help get me up to speed. And so I saw you, you know, I saw you as like, okay, you're the master, I'm the student, and so on. And yet now we're 2 years, you're always going to be, what is it, like 4 years ahead of me, JD.
Right.
So like, where am I going to be in 4 years? As a podcast host, assuming A, I'm still alive, and B, I'm still podcasting.
I think you'll be probably frustrated when people don't want to do your podcast that seem really nervous about it. You're like, come on, we just get on and talk. It's easy. I've been kind of running into that the last, especially with the, you know, the pandemic stuff. I'm like, come on, let's talk. People tighten up right away. And they're like, oh, no, I don't want to, you know, they get nervous about just talking about themselves. I'm like, we're going to talk about something you love and you're passionate about. Like, that should be easy. But people get so uptight about it. And my friend Jim, who runs Mutiny Information Cafe, used to be a sponsor of the podcast, was like, oh, well, it's old hat to you. You know, like most people don't have a platform to talk. And so also, that's something you got to keep in mind.
I agree. Also, we're talkers. We don't need a mic.
Right? That's true.
I mean, you know, I go out to dinner. I'm going to talk. You know, I put in a dating bio profile, professional talker.
Interesting.
You know, because between my teaching, the podcasting, talks, doing media, you know, and so on, it comes kind of naturally to me. I'm a much better talker than writer. And so I was eager to do podcasting for that reason. But I agree with you. It is, some people are a little intimidated. They're a little nervous. I've had a lot of, I'm not joking. I had a lot of people, it was their first ever podcast.
Okay.
Because I was looking for funny people, not professional comedians.
Right.
So for example, I had a couple of the years, I had my funniest student from my MBA class that I interviewed. And that obviously was their first ever podcast that they did. Now we had a rapport and they knew me and they trusted me and so on. And so I think that those episodes are really quite nice and they're really quite different than some of the other ones. Cause as I said, these folks are nowhere. They're lovely people and they're witty and fun, but they're not pros.
Right.
Okay. So sometimes challenges, wrangling guests and getting people to be comfortable and shine.
Yeah.
What else?
I mean, I guess you probably, as you know how, once you know how good a conversation can go, it's probably, I find myself getting frustrated when I can't get a guest to open up or a guest is reluctant to open up or say, oh, I don't want to talk about that. Can you cut that out later? It's like, oh, we had such a good conversation. And the ones that I do, you know, I consider free flowing conversation. So they could go longer than an hour. And it's like, they want me to cut something out from the beginning, you know, 20 minutes, but we you know, reference it down the road an hour and a half. And it's like, well, this isn't going to make any sense if we don't have this in.
Yes.
You know, so that's a frustrating thing to have to deal with
too. Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I get it. I mean, people are, they're concerned about their, you know, public persona, their front stage persona, you know what I mean? In a world where you can get canceled for something being misinterpreted and so on.
Right.
I'm appreciative of those concerns. But what people don't know is you are creating a shit ton of work for me
when
you do this. And this is going to be a less good experience for the listener.
Yeah.
There. I have one that I'm curious about because this is something that's still a struggle for me. And actually, it's even more of a problem with my new podcast. And that is, I feel like there's sort of a sweet spot. And I'm already exceeding it, to be honest. Where, I mean, there's these different style of podcasts. There's sort of the interview style podcast, right? Where I just ask you questions and I sit quietly. And then there's these sort of more back and forth ones. When I was working on I'm Not Joking, I found that when the ratio of my guest talking to me talking was 90-10, so it felt very interview style, that didn't feel like a good episode. And if it went the other way, where I was sort of 60-40, you know what I mean? I was out talking my guest. It also felt bad. That there's this sort of sweet spot between 80-20, 50-50, where it's about equal or my guest is talking more. Those felt like the best episodes. And so I had to kind of pull these levers and be aware of that. With solo, I find that sometimes I do a lot more talking than my guest. Now, I have a reason and a rationale for that is sometimes I know more about the topic than my guest does. There are times when I've done like 3 days of research prepping this, and then my guest is just a sounding board. And then other times I'm leaning on my guest as the expert. And so sometimes people say, you know, I really wish you let your guests talk more. And I'm like, well, I could have, but they didn't have shit to say. You know what I mean? Like, so in that way, like, it's not, I think. And I have an agenda with Solo, which is I have a bunch of information and stuff I want to get out. But with I'm Not Joking, I just wanted to take it in. I wanted stories. I wanted to hear, teach me, help me learn, because I was feeding a book project.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious about your experience with that. Is that something that you've noticed, or what do you, if you were to say, what's your ratio in that way, what does it look like?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have a, I guess I do take more of the journeyman approach to most of my interviews. You know, if I have like an Adam Caton-Holland or someone I feel I can get comedy info from that I want to, you know, be more of a sponge, you know, that it ebbs and flows. And then but I definitely think it's more of a 50-50.
Okay.
It's definitely more of a 50-50 on most of the podcasts, especially now, because I'm just like, I just want to have a good time with my buddies. You know, like the Los Chupacabros podcast is just like me wanting to have a silly goose time, like not try and interview anyone, not try and get any, like, you know, left hand right brain is like an exploration of creativity is the tagline. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm not trying to get any information out of them. It's just like having a good time or trying to find some kind of nuggets of wisdom or anything. You know, I'm not mining in that way. I've never gotten any feedback about I talk too much, but it's because I'm like, this is my podcast. I'm the one, you know, doing that. Whereas I think with, you know, what I've heard of Solo is like, you're the master. You have the information you're trying to impart to people, you know? So it makes sense to me that you'd be the one talking more. I don't know. I don't know.
It's just a struggle I have. I want my audience to be happy. I want them to get information. And so I think I just have to get to the point where you kind of need to like me if you're going to like the podcast.
Yes.
And if you don't like me, then boy, you're going to get really weary pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That said, I also realize it's precious moments and that the best podcasts have a banter and a back and forth and have a conversational quality to it, rather than you're in the audience hearing a lecture and then responding with questions and comments and so on. And so it's funny, you know, I'm 150 episodes into podcasting and I still feel like I'm good enough, but I feel like I still have a lot to do to get great. And I think some of the greatness comes from what we've been alluding to, which is, if I ever learn to edit, that would be a place that you could see the improvement. Or if I could ever find someone who I could allow to edit and trust their judgment, you know, without me being so hands-on, that might be something that would improve. That's there. I think one of the interesting things is, you've alluded to this, is sometimes you have guests who are kind of bigger names, experts, you know, and you want to kind of get something from them. I have been pleasantly surprised by the fact that while having big name people is fun, is exciting, and you can learn from them, I have been sort of pleasantly surprised by the number of sort of novice comedians, regular, everyday, funny people who aren't necessarily media stars or personalities. And how much, because we have an individual bond and comfort, we can have a really warm, enjoyable conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
That's there. And so I don't think there's like if I was a journalist, I wouldn't talk to a lot of the people that I talk to. But because it's a conversation, some of those conversations can really shine.
Yeah, yeah. There's time to get to it. You know, we're going on this journey together. You know, and that's also a frustrating thing. Sometimes if the podcasts go a little long, it's like, we had a good discussion about, you know, I remember a Denver critic was like, said something about like, oh, I got, you know, talking about separating the art from the artist. And this was right when Bill Cosby stuff was hitting. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine tweeted at them, hey, you should listen. They had a good conversation about this on Left Hand Right Brain. And she's like, oh, I've been hearing about that. I'll look into it. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, that discussion is 45 minutes into the show. And right at the beginning, we were talking about sex, you know, so I was like, man, if they can't get past these two guys talking about sex, you know, two comics just joking about stuff, then they won't get to the better conversation, or quote unquote different, you know, the gem here towards the end. And that's always a frustrating thing. It's like, am I alienating my audience too much? That's a point you brought up. I wanted to, in Shtick to Businesses, don't serve warm tea, you know, and that's something you talked about in the Anthony Jeselnik episode, which is one of the ones I chose for my, you know, three to review, is, you know, people are going to be either on board or not. You can win over some people. They're going to tune in for certain guests and then tune out for a while. You know, I come back and forth to Joe Rogan if there's a good guest. I listen to the Elon Musk one. You know, I listen to the Kanye one. You know, but I don't listen to all of them.
Did you listen to mine?
I did. I've listened to that multiple times.
It's not my best work, but it was fun to be on there.
I got your book right here. I was just listening to the Shtick to Business on audio, which I love. I was like, man, you got to get this on audio or I'm not going to get to it.
Well, JD, I appreciate the support. And I really do appreciate you helping me get up to speed. You were incredibly generous. And I think this is one of those things I'll hope I will pay it forward at some point. I've certainly had a lot of conversations with people who've considered podcasts and either talking them into it or talking them out of it, depending on
The amount of work they want to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the issue is this, is that I think that as I always say, have a plan, you know, and so why do it? And so I want to turn to our attention to these sort of favorite moments, these favorite episodes.
Sure.
I'm Not Joking was designed as a deep dive to, as I would joke, trick people into talking to me for more than an hour, people who might not have otherwise done that. And then Solo is designed to be a resource. It's designed to be an inspiration and a resource for people. And so while I'm Not Joking was more selfish, Solo is more selfless. And then, but each of them have been, I think, valuable in their own right. So, yeah. So I asked JD, what are three of the episodes that really stood out to you that you enjoyed? And I didn't let him choose episode number one, which he... it was on.
I did think about.
And so why don't we start with the Anthony Jeselnik one, which precedes this one, which is number 100. It's called Dropping Babies with Anthony Jeselnik. That's an inside joke. You have to have seen his stand-up special, Fire in the Maternity Ward, to understand he has a whole bit about dropping babies, which you would not think is funny, but is a real crowd pleaser. So what stood out to you?
Depends on who you ask, I guess.
Indeed. Well, if you're an Anthony Jeselnik fan, for people who don't know Anthony Jeselnik, he is a, I would say he plays with the taboo.
Yes.
He plays with the taboo. A lot of one-liners, a lot of sort of setup punchline kind of jokes.
Well, I do think the idea of naming your podcast is also like just an inside joke. Like you have to listen to the whole thing. That's also a fun thing. I think as a podcaster, only other podcasters get, if you do title your own podcast episodes, it's just a little aside there. But
so you're saying, so you want the, yeah, it's interesting because I think there is a tension around titles. So on one hand, you want to title it in terms of helping search, like SEO type stuff. And on the other hand, it's best if it sort of has a little bit of zing, you know, it kind of draws you in and teases, right? Because if you say Dropping Babies with Anthony Jeselnik, I got to find out what's going on with this.
Right, right.
Yeah, I see.
So I think this idea of what is cool is always something that I've like battled with my whole life. Is something you talked about with Anthony Jeselnik.
And then, that's been a topic that has come up in Solo also, which is like, what makes a single person cooler than a married person?
Yeah, that's debatable, you know?
So yeah,
is Anthony it a leather and I, jacket?
Anthony and I have a conversation about cool. I think Anthony is one of the cooler comics out there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He definitely presents himself in a way that, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
People identify as cool. Yeah, and you talked about your someone you know in wrote a college essay about what makes something cool, and I was thinking, and it was something more about timeless, and the other guy had more of a benign violation theory type theory about it, where it's like, you know, you have to overlap a little bit of like being dangerous but also acceptable.
Yeah, it's close to that. Yeah, well said. So this is Caleb Warren, who's actually my co-creator of the benign violation theory. He has done work on coolness, so he's interested in sort of transgressiveness in general. And so what he finds is that people, things that are cool, have this element of sort of breaking rules, but doing it in a way that's not too deviant. So there's this notion of autonomy, that you are the decision maker. You are the person who are making these choices, and you're sort of optimally deviant in a sense. And so it's like, obviously the mainstream is not cool, but neither are criminals, you know? And so there's this idea that being just, you know, just deviant enough, and right. it explains why things that are cool don't stay cool. Because as the world, like, for example, at one point having a tattoo was completely deviant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it became cool. And then at some point, when does it become not uncool,
not but cool.
but it, you know, now it becomes mass, right? It's no longer niche, you know, in that sense. And so, so that's kind of a fun conversation. And that's something I feel like people know coolness when they see it, but they don't know why. It just sort of feels like it just is.
Right.
And so having that conversation, I think. And so what makes a single person cool is a person who is single by choice.
Right. Not because of lack of options.
Exactly. Like incels are not cool. You know, in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, no offense, you know, and hey guys, just keep working on it. It'll turn for you eventually.
Yeah, I remember there's just something I latched on to now as I'm older is like authenticity being cool, or like not trying to put on something.
Yeah.
And then you and then talking about like things being a choice, mm-hmm. being cool. Like we mentioned Neil Strauss came up in the podcast that we did. And I don't know if you've read his book. I've read his book, The Game, The Truth, Emergency. I was really into that social dynamic pickup artist stuff when I was a kid, uh-huh. when I was younger. But I mean, he talks about shaving your head is a choice. Being bald is not.
So, that's right.
Right. When Michael Jordan shaves his head, that's a choice. And that's like a statement that's cool. But a guy who's just losing his hair and is bald, you know, is not cool.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's an example. But
and Neil Strauss has shaved his head. So that also helped.
That was a big thing in the book is he didn't want to shave his head. And he was holding on to little wisps of hair that he talks about having tumbleweeds on his head.
Yeah. And the connection, you know, I read The Game, of course, because that pickup artist stuff is such a fascinating phenomenon. And it's one that I've really pushed back on, especially with Solo, which is, I think that The Game, as it's been said, and, you know, look, I think, you know, this is a bunch of autistic dudes kind of reverse engineering dating in order to have some short-term success with women. I've always been bothered by that idea because I always felt like, I don't want to say, it sort of feels like cheating in the sense like you're presenting someone who you aren't truly in order to hook up. The other one is I always felt that it was a hollow endeavor, is that most of these men, yes, of course they wanted sex, but they were interested in sex as part of a more consistent, intimate romantic relationship. That is, that they didn't just want to get laid, but they also liked women and liked the company of women, but didn't happen to be good at it mm-hmm. and didn't happen to be appealing enough to attract women naturally. And so what they did was they put on this, they played the game in a sense. Right. But I always felt like that these women that they managed to hook up with was going to spend enough time with them and realize, oh, this guy's a loser. And so I always felt like the real work was not to learn these little tricks to trick someone into being attracted to you, but to be an attractive person.
Right, right.
And the way
that's what Neil Strauss talks about at the end of the book is like, you know, developing yourself to be someone who's, you know, people want to be around.
Yes.
As opposed to just, you know, putting on a mask for a while.
Indeed. Yeah, that's right. And so I feel like, and of course, that's not something you can do overnight.
Right.
You know, like that's something that takes some time, whether it be you launch a podcast, you learn to play a good, you know, you learn to play a guitar, you become an improviser, you do more than
stand up comedy.
That's right. Yeah. Well, look, I'd rather, you know, I mean, at least stand up comics are getting out there in the world versus just playing video games or watching sports. And so.
I mean, I know plenty of comics that only come out at 11 o'clock at night to do their 2 a.m. set and then go right back into their, you know.
That's right.
Okay.
They're not fully developing their range of of expertise, attributes, interestingness.
Yeah.
They're not as interested in the world as they ought to be in order to become a good stand-up.
Right.
Anything else from the Anthony Jeselnik one that stands out to
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I'm just talking about this. Comics aren't healthy. You know, something you talked about it not being like a healthy lifestyle, you know, late hours, not keeping things, you know, Anthony Jeselnik, apparently works out a lot, which is good. But, you know, it doesn't really lend itself to the healthiest lifestyle even before COVID and everything. You know, they're traveling, probably eating not well, you know, not taking care of their bodies. That was something I identified with. And then, you know, having to go away from that a little bit to really, you know, take control of some other aspects of my life before I could bring, you know, those things back to stage, you know, or being a fully well-developed, rounded, more well-rounded person.
Indeed. You know? Yeah. And actually that makes it into the book, Shtick to Business, where I do something about, the whole book is about how to think funny and how you can learn from the masters of comedy. But I do a little epilogue about what not to do. Like, we don't want to, the average person doesn't want to emulate a comic in all ways. And one of those things is most comics, they eat poorly, they drink too much, they don't sleep enough, that kind of thing. And yet, you know, all of your work as a comic is built on this grind, day in and day out, pushing on stuff, and you can't let yourself break down if you need a year-long grind in order to create a stand-up special.
Yeah, I mean, and that's for the pros, can do it a year, you know, only a few select people are doing yearly, you know, specials, but I mean, it takes 10 years for someone to come up with their, you know, first to become even proficient is what most comics say. It's like, it takes 10, you know, you want to be a comic? All right. Talk to me in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, taking a bigger stage, having a bigger perspective. That's something I really enjoyed at the end of the book. Cause I do think that's kind of where I'm going towards in my life. You know, I got married, you know, stepping away from like, oh, I need to be thought of in a certain way by these comics, or, you know, have certain status in the community, you know, letting go of those things. Yeah. And I'm actually a lot happier.
I'm thrilled to hear that. Yeah. I mean, look, I think the thing is, this is if you, JD, decided to pursue interests that made the Denver comedy community happy, A, you're not going to be happy.
Yes.
And B, that's not really the launching point for bigger things. No offense to the Denver comedy community. It's actually, as far as comedy communities go, I think it's one of the better ones. Mm-hmm. But it's like, they're not the gatekeepers. They're not the tastemakers. And also, it's going to stifle your creativity if you're trying to make that group of people happy.
Right.
But that's good.
And I think...
Please.
I was going to say, and I think that leads to the second one with Tony Horton.
Oh, but I'm going to pause then, because I want to say one thing about Anthony.
Oh, yeah, no, I can keep going.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to say, because that was also one of my favorite ones, because he's so bright. That became very clear very quickly. Like, he's so bright, and I really like his style. And then I found myself being a tiny bit of a fan in that episode than I normally wouldn't be. And so it was sort of uniquely challenging in that sense. And so the other thing that I have to say that I liked, I didn't even think about it until a friend of mine pointed out to me. We have this conversation in the podcast where he refers to himself as the villain. Like, he has this sort of villain persona. And I correct him in the episode. And I say, I don't think you're a villain. Like, of course, you're no hero, right? You know what I mean? Right, like, hero has a bit about dropping babies. And it's like, you are the anti-hero. And so, and I think a lot of, you know, comedian, and this is something that Caleb and I have talked about in the coolness world, you know, the cool people on television are anti-heroes.
Yes.
You know, they have some motivation that you can get behind, but they're severely flawed. You know, they don't have the purest intentions, but they have appealing qualities. And so, you know, Luke Skywalker is the hero and Darth Vader is the villain, but Han Solo is the anti-hero.
Yeah.
And we all, like, you want to hang out with Han.
Right.
You know, like that kind of thing.
Should I rock a vest? You know?
And so I see Anthony as an anti-hero. You know, yes, flawed, not always the purest of motives, but desirable qualities, and not looking to do, not looking to do here to do evil in the world. And so my buddy's like, yeah, I like it when you tell someone what your opinion, your model of what they are and who they are is. He's like, because you don't, you're not asking their permission to do it. You just volunteer it. But I had never thought of it. I thought that was a fun moment to have. And he was, I think, receptive to the idea. Actually, I hope he would be accepted to the idea because it's a much better descriptor as anti.
Yeah, I mean, he jumped on that right away. He had made that Deadwood reference about, like, you know, he's not the best character, but there are worse people around, you know. And by kind of default, he become more of a, you know, likable figure or something like that.
Indeed.
But, yeah.
All right, let's go to the Tony Horton one, because the Tony Horton one also made it into the book. He's in chapter one.
Yeah, I was so excited when I saw that one. Because I was like, oh, Tori, I had the P90X video. I mean, I drank that Kool-Aid, you know, when I was younger.
So P90X, for people who don't know, came out, was it like late 90s? I'd say late 90s, DVDs. These are super intense HIIT workouts, high intensity training workouts.
That are like an hour and a half each.
Hardcore. And if you wanted to get fit, it would get you fit. It would waste you, but you would get fit. And Anthony he's a witty guy. He's an energetic guy. He's enthusiastic. And I think you sort of needed his kind of positive energy in order to, like, not hate him and hate the experience because it was so challenging.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd done like Billy Blanks Tai Bo, like karate videos when I was really young before I started doing karate, getting like proper karate lessons. And so, like, he was just such a big departure from that. Cause I remember Billy Blanks. And then, you know, to have Tony Horton being like, come on, guys. And it's like super enthusiastic, do your best, forget the rest and all that jazz.
Yeah,
when you said Anthony, you know him on a personal level. So you call Tony Horton Anthony.
Yeah, yes. Well, I got to meet him, which was great. And he is, so Tony is a former stand-up actor. He was a bartender. He did a little bit of, he was living the LA Hollywood kind of lifestyle. And then he became a celebrity trainer by getting Tom Petty into shape for one of his tours. And, like, he got Tom Petty so kind of shredded that Petty was, like, performing in just his vest. He didn't wear a shirt anymore that was there. And the beautiful thing about Tony Horton is he's really like that. Like, he's an energetic guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's authenticity coming out. You know, you can't fake that. I think it, you know, it'd be off-putting if someone was really just trying to be that guy and not generally have that behind it, you know, the truth.
You know, the other thing about Anthony was, excuse me, Tony, I keep calling him Anthony.
Yes, I'm getting confused with Anthony Justin. Yes,
Tony Horton was, I went to his house to do this, and afterwards he hosted a backyard workout. Like, his whole house is built. He has his own fitness room. He has outdoor space dedicated. He has, like, basically an obstacle course on his property and so on. And he hosted a plyo workout in his backyard that I joined afterwards. And it wrecked me. I mean, I was sore for 2-3 days afterwards. And he was exactly the way he was on the P90X videos as he was in that backyard workout.
Yeah, when I heard, I was like, oh no, Peter, I don't know if you know what you're getting into. Have you seen these P90X workouts? They're intense. It's like, you're in good shape, but man, that guy's next level.
You know?
And it was interesting to hear his backstory, you know, kind of humanized him, you know, and then to hear that he'd gone through, you know, being sick before that was, you know, like, oh, what a shame, you know, someone who's at the peak of physical conditioning, you know, can get laid low so easily.
Indeed. Yeah. He was super sick. Like, and for someone whose identity is about
fitness,
to have that taken away.
Yeah, that had to be hard. That has to be a big ego check right there.
But but I think, you know, he was the guy who's a sort of, I mean, if you think about it, right, you know, we hear these Hollywood stories, you know, the person who tries to make it and doesn't, you know, he was even like, he wasn't a Chippendales dancer. He was like a Chippendales sort of go-go dancer, like warm up and stuff like that. So, like, you know, this is someone who is like hustling and trying and trying and trying, and it seems like it's not going to happen for him. And then he finds his lane. And, you know, now he's mid-60s and, you know, he's still in that lane. It's really, he's an easy guy to like.
Right. And I that's something.
Oh, and I agree. Like, there is something about authenticity we talk about in comedy. I think it's the case in podcasting. I mean, I will tell you this. It's something I need to work more and more on. The more I the more I let my backstage self out, especially with the solo podcast, I think the better it's going to be.
I mean, yeah, that's the double-edged sword. You know, people want you to be authentic and be you, but then if they don't like something about your thing, you know, they'll take a little bit of a podcast, not listen the whole hour and a half, but they'll take the snippet of you joking around or whatever out of context and they'll crucify you for it. You know, that's a whole, you know, that, like I said, double-edged sword. But I enjoyed how you got, you know, not fanboy. I didn't think you were anywhere near fanboy with Anthony Jeselnik, but I mean, I could tell you were, had a little more juice behind, you know, that, you know, your enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think nerves are good.
Yeah.
I think a little bit of nerves are good, you know? It's all like dating. Like, it's good to be a little excited and a little nervous, I think.
Yeah. And that's genuine. That's the thing that's going to be, that they're going to latch onto is like, oh, this is charming and I like this guy over like trying to be too cool. That's something that was a really handicap for me. Even with comedy, I think I try to be too cool. Mm. Or I want to be thought of as, you know, cool, but also talking about like, oh, how I'm, you know, whatever my goofy setup is. You know, self-deprecating is hard.
Yes, that's right.
When you're trying to be cool.
Yes, I think that that's exactly right.
With the Tony Horton one, that's something I find myself going more towards. Because right now, with the COVID stuff, I was talking, you know, right before we started recording, and I want to get this out there. You mentioned that I look good.
I said lean. I said, JD, you're looking lean.
Oh, that's a form of good, right? I take that as looking good. You know?
It is true. But,
you find myself going back to these things I found more comforting when I was a kid. Like, I have been going to some more Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes, martial arts stuff. I've been finding myself going to, which is so funny now with the COVID stuff, I've been going to karate classes, mm-hmm. you know, which is, you know, not maybe, I don't know, but one might not think getting into a physical type sport might not be the smartest thing to do right now. But I've been getting into that lifting, you know, going to the gym more than I have mm-hmm. before, you know. Getting into this physical fitness stuff, I like Antonio Horton being like, yeah, you can find kind of a cross section of like comedy, you know, and that's something you talk about in Stick to Business as well, is, you know, kind of stepping out and, you know, you might be having the comedy base and then finding yourself doing something in kind of physical fitness or something like that might be, might set me above someone else who hasn't done something like that, you know, have the experience that I have.
It is worth thinking about this. So, you know, so let's talk about that idea for a moment. So there, I think there are two lessons from the Anthony Horton, Tony Horton one, which is that one is, you know, as a comic, you learn the reversal. So chapter one of the book is about, it's called Reverse It. It's about producing an opposing perspective and how that's a useful way to create comedy. Mm-hmm. Right? So Jeselnik has a joke, something like, you know, my parents were really strict, you know, they caught me smoking and they forced me to smoke an entire pack of cigarettes to teach me a lesson about brand loyalty. Yeah. And so, you know, you take people down a path and then you bring them back the other way. And hopefully if someone heard that, they thought that was funny. It's funny when Anthony says it. And so that reversal can be used in other places in life. So, for example, P90X is a reversal because at the time, everybody was doing these sort of, you know, the Thighmaster and these other very sort of, it's never been so easy to get in shape. And then here comes Tony Horton and says, it is insanely difficult to get in shape. And if you want to get in shape, you got to do insanely difficult workouts, right? So that's a reversal. And in many ways, that changed the fitness industry. Now we have CrossFit. Now we have Orange Theory. Now we have Barry's Bootcamp. You know, we have this style of workout that we take for granted now that actually works, you know, that actually works. But the other thing is, and I think this is something you've been alluding to, is, well, I could compete with all the other stand-up comics in the world, but boy, that's hard. And so you might be sort of, not you, JD, but someone may be a mediocre talent when it comes to stand-up, mm-hmm. but you move them into another activity that is not about comedy, and suddenly you're the funniest person in that industry, right? So Tony Horton is a so-so comic, but he's going to be the funniest fitness instructor that you're going to have. And so when people ask me, Pete, are you funny? I'm like, I mean, I'm not stand-up. I'm not professional comedy funny, but by compared to the average professor, I'm hysterically funny. You know, and so I think there is a lesson there of like, oh, maybe you have something that you're good at, but you just can't compete with the elites. Well, then escape the competition and find a different place to compete.
Yeah. That's a hard lesson too, you know, because everyone in comedy is like, it's this or nothing, you know, like that's the whole mentality. It's like, you got to be out there grinding. If you're not, don't even waste my time, you know. And that was a mentality I thought I had to have for a long time.
I would start with the question with I'm Not Joking, as you know, and I didn't ask you at this time because I've already asked you it before, which is, if you weren't doing what you're doing, what would you be doing? Mm-hmm. And a surprising number of comics make the joke dead or in rehab. You know what I mean? Like that is that they don't even see there being an alternative to it. Right. This was a lesson that didn't make the book, didn't make Shtick to Business. And that was, I have this idea for a lesson called No Plan B. And so some comics believe, and some people believe, that you just, if you have a backup, that backup's going to handicap you. Because you know, when things get tough, you can go, well, I'm just going to go do this other thing. And the idea is that it's either you succeed or you die trying, so to speak. I just don't, the reason I didn't put that into the book is I don't think it's the only strategy, especially in business. Right. I like the idea of hobbies. I like the spending 10% of your time on a hobby that might turn into an entrepreneurial venture. You know, like you don't have to quit your day job and give up your health insurance in order to see, does this consulting company might it work, or does this, you know, sort of new app that you think of might work, and so on. So I cut it from the book. And so I don't think there's one way to do it, but there is this very romanticized version of that.
Right. Yeah. I think, this idea that you bring up quite a bit in the podcast, and I don't know if you want to keep on this Tony Horton one, or I have the next one. I think it goes into the next podcast I have.
Let's go into the next one.
Where you talked with Wendy Curtis about comedy works. You know, you talk about this idea of going on a sabbatical, you know, and finding out other things, you know, genuinely enjoying your life, you know, because she's been grinding for 40 years, you know, to make Comedy Works the best club, you know, it can be, and arguably one of the best clubs in the country.
In the world.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. I'd say the world. Yeah.
So for those people who don't know this, Wendy Curtis owns and manages Comedy Works in Denver, which is in downtown Denver. And then she opened a second sister one in South Denver. And it's one of the favorite clubs of Chappelle. Joe Rogan filmed a special in there. It is engineered to be a place that just creates laughs. And so she's super thoughtful about it. And what's very fun is I interviewed her on the stage of Comedy Works, which was
yeah, that sounded awesome.
Yeah.
Could you feel it on the stage? Could you feel some kind of energy?
I would say this, when you're on the stage, you recognize immediately that it feels different than a lot of comedy spaces. Like the ceiling is super low, the audience, you're right on top of the audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a big room, but it's a sea of chairs, and it's tiered just perfectly because, again, the ceiling is so low. It's really, it has earned that that idea of a top stage in the world.
Yeah,
it's there. But we talked about having a sabbatical, and you know, as an academic, I get a sabbatical every 7 years, and I make the argument about the value of a sabbatical in terms of new ideas, refreshing yourself, and so on. And I was sort of, was I gentle? I don't know if I was gentle.
Oh yeah, I don't think you're. I mean, yeah. No one could tell that lady what to do. That's for sure.
That's
you know,
true.
So
yeah,
yeah, she's a presence. You know, she's definitely like the godmother of, you know, comedy here in Denver for sure. So, so this idea of taking a sabbatical and doing things that are genuine, you know, because I've heard like T.J. Miller talks about like, oh, I would only go camping to write a bit about camping, you know, and then you're not really fully experiencing life. You're not really living something. You're just trying to deconstruct stuff I mean, and that's not genuine. Mm-hmm. So I think there is lots of value in finding enjoyment and value in things that aren't comedy. And then the funny will come from that, you know, because I mean, I think if you're a funny person, you see life through a funny lens. So it's not like, that's how I've always put it. You know, I see life through this lens of comedy, and I don't need to exactly deconstruct or mine everything for comedy. It just, you know, it'll come to me for, and I, you know, you can do more work on the page of writing it down and extracting things. But I think the true, you know, someone who is a comic at heart just always sees these things, you know, come up.
Indeed. And I think that there is this idea about chapters in life. Mm-hmm. And so, and this is both a strength and a weakness for myself, you know, which is I like to dabble a lot. I'd like to try new things. I want to do it all before I die. And so on one hand, you know, you're encouraged to specialize, right? So you can imagine, you know, obviously this is pre-COVID. You can imagine Wendy then taking comedy works and opening a new one in a new city. Right. You know what I mean? Like she has the formula. She knows how it's done. And she could just start, you know, building an empire of comedy clubs. And the world would be better off. Right. You know, I mean, there's a lot of bad comedy clubs out there and a lot of poorly run ones and so on. And so she could do that. But, you know, there's other things that she wants to do. She talked about wanting to write a book. What would that book look like? Well, talk about reach, you know what I mean? Especially as a female founder of a successful business and doing it in one of the most male-dominated industries that there are, you know, and the value of inspiring, you know, other people to create products within comedy, especially inspiring women to do that. And so, but the problem is when you have your day-to-day, you know, you've just, you know, is your career like a train? Where you get on and you just go through these stops that are already predetermined, or is your life more like a sailboat where you can pick up wind and take it into another place? I stole that sailboat thing from Scott Barry Kaufman, who's a forthcoming guest on Solo. And I think it's a quite nice, quite apt analogy. So I was sort of gently or not so gently encouraging her. She deserves a sabbatical.
Yeah.
You know,
She's definitely the kind of person who's not going to take it, though, because that's not how you get to where she is. You got to keep grinding.
But that's the reversal. Sometimes you have to not work in order to allow yourself a new idea, a new insight. You know, if you're always creating, maybe a little bit of time consuming is a good break and so on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the idea of the sabbatical. Isn't that something you talk about in the book about like there are some businesses that don't grow to like cultivate their product in a way, like you mentioned some bakery. And that's kind of what she's doing. You know, I think if she wouldn't want to open up another comedy work somewhere else because she knows the work, the specific work, hard work that it takes to make something great like Comedy Works, and that you can't just reproduce that somewhere else, or like the work that would go into that. You know, she might not want to do again, you know?
Yeah, this guy, he's an ink writer. It's Bo Burlingham, I think is the name. But he talks about these sort of small giants or little giants. I can't remember the name, but he has a book about this. So these are products and services, businesses that purposely stay small, that they don't look to scale and grow. And they have this sort of energy, this gravitas, where people want to be part of them. And that goes against the normal scale it, grow it, sell it, move on, you know what I mean? Kind of a model. And that they have this, they're sort of familiar and they're comfortable and they're likable and they're very human. And I think you're right. I think that if Wendy wanted to recreate Comedy Works in, you know, in another city, she'd probably have to move to that city.
Right, yeah.
To do it. Because
and be there day in, day out, just like she was, you know, at Comedy Works for 40 years.
Yeah, it's not a manual that you can hand over and start a new McDonald's franchise.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was my takeaway from it anyway.
Neat. So what's your third one? Oh, no, sorry, that was your third one.
Yeah, the Wendy Curtis one was the third one.
That's great. So if I may, I want to just finish up by talking about a few insights that I had and getting your reactions to them. That's okay.
Yeah, please. Okay. Yeah.
So I had this observation. So the subtitle of the book is What the Masters of Comedy Can Teach You About Breaking Rules, Being Fearless, and Building a Serious Career. And I like this idea of comic as rule breaker. And so there's a sort of norm associated with interviews and podcasts. And what I found was that it was my best, it was the biggest guest names that were most likely to break the rules. Even though they were most familiar with the rules, they were most likely to deviate from them. And so, for example, the normal thing is the host asks the questions and sets the topics. I interviewed Jimmy Carr in Melbourne, Australia, backstage before one of his shows. And I had had experience with Jimmy before. He had blurred my first book. He has written a book about humor, and he was a kind of, I would say, interested in and a fan of the benign violation theory. He likes it as an explanation of humor. And he immediately starts asking me questions. Like, as soon as I introduce him, he starts asking me questions and asking about the benign violation theory and so on. And I was like a little bit taken aback because I have this whole script and all these things that I want to get from him. But he sees this as like, oh, I have this behavioral scientist who's studying this thing that I'm passionate about, that I write about, that I produce. Let me use this opportunity to get what I can from this kind of thing. And that, I will tell you, that conversation, more than anyone, I was on. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, I am with someone who I need to be on the edge of my seat, thinking as quickly as possible, because he is way smarter than I am. And he has thought about this stuff for longer than I have. Maybe, you know, I've thought about it differently, but he, and so I just found that kind of course, this guy is a comic. He breaks rules for a living in order to create laughs. He's going to break the rule, the script associated with a podcast episode. And so I think that there is something to kind of glean from that thing. Like, he, and also it's like, it makes for a good spirited episode. Because he's not just mailing it in, where he's just like, and then I do this, and then, and he's answering the question the same way he has 100 times before.
So you want my thoughts on?
Well, just if you have any reaction to that, if, in your own experience,
No, it definitely makes sense. I mean, I wanted to right when you started, because I think the familiarity with being interviewed and talking is just, so it's old hat, so he can be more present. I think that was, you know, it was even hard for him to be like, okay, he wants to do his intro before I say hi. I was like, no, let's just get into it, you know, because I know how good it can be and I want to get there, you know, a good conversation. So I think I just want to get to that as soon as possible. I know I mean, there is a familiarity with us because we've, you know, talked before. So, I mean, I think of it as more just like friends talking. So, yeah, that's a, it makes sense that some and if someone's passionate about this thing, you're talking about what he's, you know, been doing his whole life. So he's going to be more, you know, passionate about it. So that makes sense.
Yeah, it was fun.
And that's always. Yeah, it's hard when you have the idea of like how it should go. You know, I have my script, I'm going to do my intro. And then someone else just totally is just like, wow, let's do this. You know, or like, I just, you know, almost taking control, taking the reins. And that's fun. You know, if you're ready, to play a game, you know, if you're ready to play, then let's do it. You know, and that's, you know, that's when a good conversation happens. Because it doesn't happen all the time, you know. The art of a good conversation does take some cultivation and time to build. Yeah. And that's something I think most people don't get about podcasting. You know, it's like, it's not easy.
No.
To have a good conversation.
You know, it's so funny about it. I don't know if you've had this experience, but there's times where you finish the conversation, you go, I don't know if that went so well. And then you listen to it later, you go, oh yeah, it did. You know what I mean? Because there's so much going on in your head as it's happening, but no one else has access to all those other thoughts. That you're having, they're just hearing two people hopefully having a good time. You know, what was pretty wild about that experience is we did that in the green room. Then I went to the audience and he went to the stage and he did an hour and a half show that killed in front of thousands of people. You know what I mean? It was in one of these big sort of opera style theaters that was doing bits and jokes and so on. And just in total and utter control of the entire room. Handling people, yelling out things and so on. And it'd be no surprise that, you know, that he could excel one-on-one like that.
and you warmed him up. Like that's you got him in the mood. Right. You know, that was exactly. You know, I think you have to. Sometimes I'll call someone to like just talk before I'll do a convert. You know, have a good podcast or something, or you know, if I'm nervous about a podcast.
Yes,
so got to start the. Get the train moving.
That's
you know?
Super. Well, the other one that I had that I liked, and this is someone I had met before, was Will Anderson. He's an Aussie comic, and he's a total professional. That episode is called From Farm to Stage. And what I realized from that episode is that Will grew up on a farm. His family are farmers. They have dairy mm-hmm. cows. And how much working on a farm prepared him for a life as a comic and the grind. And so I have this chapter in the book called Work Hard or Hardly Work, in which
so he talks about the cow's got to be milked.
The cow has got to be milked. Yeah that you yeah, know yeah. And so on. And so and there's like the jokes have to be written, and he is such a professional. And I left this out of the book, but it came up in the podcast. So he was on a panel at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival at Powell's bookstore in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon. And we were doing this science versus comedy panel to promote the book. And it's great to do this panel because, you know, the deck is stacked against the comics. So we have a moderator who's a friend of ours. It's my co-author, Joel Warner, and I representing the science, and then three comics. And so the moderator asks these questions about comedy, which we've written about in the book. You know what I mean? And so the comics are very entertaining. You know, obviously they're the stars in the sense, but to the degree that you view this as a versus, as a debate, Joel and I win. You know what I mean? Joel and I win. Uh-huh. Except the one time that hasn't happened was with Will Anderson. And so the moderator asks the question. Will chimes in, and our words start coming out of his mouth. And coming out of his mouth in this witty, pithy, funny way, because not only does he have this great Aussie accent, but he's also a professional comedian. Uh-huh. And he just ruins us. Like, he just destroys the whole thing. And afterwards, I walk up to him, I said, oh, you know, that was really well done. You were great. And I said, you read the book, didn't you? He says, I did, mate, on the plane. And so he's such, you know, he's just doing this panel. Everybody else, every other comic I've ever had on the panel just shows up. He read a 210-page book in order to prep for it. Is it any surprise that Will is as successful as he is? Because he has
no.
So last one is, and this is a very fun one, and it was with an aspiring up-and-coming comedy mind named Claire Downs. And Claire is she's a writer mostly, and she hasn't made it. She hasn't had her big break yet. And Claire epitomizes the authenticity that we've been talking about. She is completely unapologetic and honest and forthright and authentic in the conversation. And she talks about, and this is that idea of like how hard it is to do. She talks about these kind of menial, shitty temp jobs that she gets in order to pay for her lifestyle as a comic.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah, right? Yeah.
She has all these hacks that allow her to get the job done and work on her comedy and get paid to work on her comedy. And I sort of talk about how kind of people who are entrepreneurial minded need to sort of not break the rules, but bend the rules a little bit in the book. And so I use the example of the Jennifers from the Rent the Runway, and how they are like told by this big time fashion designer's assistant that she no longer wants to see them.
Oh, right.
And they're we're losing signal. We're going to be there in a minute. And we're just around the corner anyways. And they show up even though they've been told not to show up. And they end up having an hour-long meeting with her that's super helpful and useful and so on. And so Claire has, she calls it her go bag. And it goes something like this. So she packs her bag for her work. She packs a bag with all her comedy work in it. Her laptop, her notebook, and so on. And then she packs another bag that she puts her go bag into. Then she gets into work and she quickly and hurries does her temp job work. And then she sets up her workstation with a mug, with some half-drank mug of coffee, some wrappers, some notepads.
Yeah, the candy wrappers thing is interesting. This is the psychology that goes into that.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm kind of a mess. Leave me alone.
And then, you know, she puts a jacket on the back of her chair, and then she takes her go bag and she goes finds another place to work on her comedy. So anybody walking by her desk thinks, well, Claire's just in the bathroom or whatever.
Yeah.
And she talked about how she would like schedule these phone calls in a private booth, and then she would go. She says she once drove to Beverly Hills and pitched a TV show during this time. Now, we can debate the ethics of any of this, obviously. But the point is that I wouldn't bet against Claire in terms of her being successful in the cutthroat world of comedy, because just how ingenious she is about finding these hacks, I thought was fun.
I keep thinking of the word chutzpah that takes, like the balls, you know, like that is something, that people, comedians all kind of have. Any story you hear, comics, successful comics talking about podcasts and stuff, they just all had this little bit of extra oomph, this courage to do that kind of stuff. You know, just to try and bend the rules just a little bit, not fully break. We're always pushing the boundaries, but, you know, we know enough to not cross the line. Most of the time, you know, because we've already crossed it too many times, so we can, you know, we kind of know where the line is and stuff like that. It's that is inspiring in a way, you know.
Yeah, I think
it's like
I think it would be a good scene in a movie, you know.
Yeah,
that's
how
good it is. It's a good scene in a movie.
Yeah,
yeah. I think an Alan Alda character in I don't know if it's a Woody Allen movie or I can't remember what it is. He talks about how a good joke bends but doesn't break in that sense. So, JD. This is Peter. A monumental moment because I'm this is officially my last episode of I'm Not Joking. I will say this, if Jerry Seinfeld talks to me, I'll bring it back. Chris Rock,
Sarah
Silverman, you know.
You're not just gonna put it on solo?
Well, not Jerry, he's married now. It would have been good 20 years.
So you won't have any marriage. I could never be on
that's
solo.
True. I could. I mean, we would have to be talking about living a remarkable life. Kind of thing.
Oh, you can't do that if
you're married. No, you can, no. But you know what I mean. But I would bring this back out of mothballs. But I wanted to put have a nightcap, so to speak, to bring it back.
Sure.
To your thing. So I want to finish by asking you, as I turn my attention fully to solo, to this other podcast and to this project, is there any advice that you would have for me as I go from 150 episodes of experience to 300 episodes of experience? What's the sort of next level stuff that you think I should be considering?
I mean, the thing that I've always butted my head about is advertising.
Mm.
You know, how do you do that? Start making money off of it. Always been so jealous, but also not motivated enough to go for that kind of advertising. So, I mean, I guess, you know, making that step to having podcasting support your lifestyle. And I don't know if that'll be Patreon or whatever, you know, you're going to do. Yeah. But that seems to be that, you know, the people that are going the distance, you know, make that step, because podcasting, to do it authentically and truly and, you know, all that jazz is making it 100% what you do.
Yeah. I've noticed that. So I was not interested in monetizing I'm Not Joking, because it was just designed to feed this book.
So you monetize it in a different way.
Well, almost. Yeah. I mean, it was going to be, the book was going to help with professional speaking. Obviously, COVID has made that more difficult, but, you know, we live long lives and COVID's going to go away. With solo, I have had some sponsorships, but they really have been more sort of mutually beneficial, where there are products, people that I care about that I want the world to know about their offering, rather than as a true moneymaker for me. But I don't want to do advertising. I find it distracting. But I am starting to think about someday, because I am, the more time I spend on it, the better the podcast gets. But the more time I spend on it, the more it crowds out other activities. And so I don't want to be greedy, but I also recognize that this is not completely charity work. And so I think the idea is if I get to 300, my 300th episode, and I'm still doing it exactly the same way, it's going, I don't want to say it's a failure, but I would say that I'm not growing the way I want it. I want to be growing given this, right. this challenging endeavor. Yeah. That's a useful one. So for now, people just put a check in the mail and I'll cash it for
checks. Come on. PayPal, Venmo.
I know.
You're showing your age,
I know,
Peter.
I'm teasing. You have to be highly motivated to send me a check, but I, someday perhaps, but right now I'm just enjoying doing it all. You know, it's sitting on that hobby Good. Line yeah. that I talked about earlier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, JD, I just want to say that I appreciate you and thank you for helping getting this podcast going, and thank you for helping bring it to a close.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit petermcgraw.org for more information about our guest, show notes, and social media links. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share with others. Join Dr. Peter McGraw next week for another fun, fascinating conversation on I'm Not Joking.